acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 162, Resting Knit Face. Sunday, March 26th, 2017. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each week, I post links to the things I talk about, photographs, and show notes on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. This episode features the following segments: The Front Porch, Ever-Expanding Skill Set, and so forth. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me for another episode of Yarns at Yin Hu. The weather is spring-like. This time of year reminds me a lot of being in the UK. I was a student in Bath for a semester, and frequently it was the spring semester. And there was this frequent type of weather that wasn't warm, really, nor was it cold. There was a lot of moisture in the air, and there was always some kind of cloud cover. And at first that can seem sort of dismal, but there are advantages. So sometimes in really bright sunlight, it can be very difficult to see a lot of things in nature because your eyes need to adjust to the brightness of the light. And the cloud cover allows you to look around you a lot more comfortably. There's so much bird life and bird activity right now. And yesterday, when I was on my walk along the Delaware River, I was very fortunate to see a bald eagle. I've been looking because they tend to be a little bit more active in spring, and I was very fortunate to get a glimpse. This eagle was flying directly over the river, upstream and rather low, so it was possible to get a really good glimpse. The title today is a reference to some of my attempts at mindfulness. I tend to do my mindfulness practice very much alone and secluded, and I like to take the opportunity to shut out and tune out the day a little bit and practice mindfulness, also because I'm very much a learner with this type of mindfulness meditation. But I've also been practicing a little bit while I'm knitting and while I'm doing other things to kind of clear my mind and develop this state of equilibrium and equanimity. And Samuel noticed my facial expression the other day, and he said, you know, even when you're knitting, you're supposed to be relaxed, and it always looks like your face is, you know, like you're working out some sort of problems, which is true. I have a disposition toward the serious, and it's very difficult for me to get my face to relax and my mind to relax and let go enough that my face reflects that lack of activity. One of the many tools and resources provided by the mindfulness course I'm taking online, it's from mindfulschools.org, is a series of MP3 files that allow you to listen during your practice And then I usually try to do some practices where I don't have an audio playing, and I try to recall and repeat some of the strategies that they suggest. So I've really been enjoying those tapes. And yesterday, on one of the week four tapes, the trainer suggested that when you take a mindful posture for meditation, a seated posture, he advised strong back and soft front. In other words, keep your spine strong and straight, but don't allow your whole body to be rigid. Work on softening the front of your body, making it more receptive, relaxing your face especially. And I think based on Samuel's assessment of my, he calls it resting knit face, that's something that I really need to work on. Relaxing my jaw, maybe doing a little bit of massage of my temples and just near my eyes before I take a meditation posture could help me let go of some of that tension. So that's what I've been working on this week, and not a ton of knitting. I don't have a back porch section where I talk about completed projects. I have not completed anything this week, but I've done a lot of fantasy knitting on my commute, planning in the car what I'm going to be knitting and the yarn I'm going to be using for our upcoming Summer Tops make-along. And I'm very grateful for your enthusiasm for Summer Tops make-along. The plan is to begin on April 1. Of course, if you've begun already and you have something in progress, by all means continue. But we'll have a official start on April 1 and we will conclude on the first day of summer, June 21st. Our goal is to have some tops ready for the upcoming season. These can be sewn, knit, crocheted, and I was thinking maybe even embellished or upcycled. For some of us, maybe it's time to resuscitate our wardrobe a little bit by thinking about what we already have. Maybe a top could be lengthened, cropped, sleeves removed, some embroidery added, and turned into something new. Or maybe you found something at a tag sale or a salvo, and it's not perfect the way it is, but you really see some possibilities. So all of the above are perfectly acceptable for the Summer Tops make-along. And I thought today I would tell you a little bit about the three knit tops I have planned. And then a little bit later in the episode, a few sewn items that I also plan to work on during this period between April 1 and June 21st. I would like to make some tops that are imminently wearable. So far, some of the knit garments that I've made are beautiful and wonderful, but they don't have the kind of everyday appropriateness that makes me want to reach for them all the time. And I think that's something I should work on if I'm working toward this handmade wardrobe, is something with a much simpler style and design, something a little more timeless, and something that I reach for again and again. So my first cast on will be for the Silken Straw Summer Sweater. It's designed by Pearl Soho, and this is designed for a certain type of like straw and wire yarn, one of those alchemy yarns that's very expensive and kind of outlandish, but I think the shape of the top will work for the sort of style I have in mind. And looking on the Ravelry project pages, knitters have made this out of all different types of yarn. The yarn I will use is Barocco Ultra Alpaca Fine. Its composition is 50% wool, 30% nylon, and 20% alpaca. And the color I have is 1292. I was thinking about how to describe this color, and then I looked on Ravelry to see if there was a color name associated with this yarn, because it didn't say anything on the tag. And the color is Tiger Eye, which is a perfect description. It's kind of a tawny topaz kind of color. In the Barocco Ultra Alpaca, there is quite a bit of heathering and a little bit of sophistication to the color, which makes it very interesting to look at. And I think it allows a garment knit with that yarn to go with quite a few things. Because although it seems to be one color, there are actually some other colors going on in the yarn. I have two skeins of this yarn with a total of about 860 yards, which I think is perfect for this very simple top. It looks like a cap sleeve t-shirt. It doesn't have any embellishment, any lace, any real detail. It's incredibly, incredibly simple, and that's exactly what I'm looking for. And this will be my first cast on because I acquired this yarn at the Knit Local, the getaway that we had last April. It was on the swap table. I think that Salmon Knits put it there. And I was knitting a summer top at the time, and I thought, oh, this would be perfect for another Bonnie. And I love my Bonnie top, but it's kind of a specialty top. It's not something I reach for again and again. I love it when I wear it, but I need some things that are more wearable. So that's knit number one. The second item in my queue is Jasmine Tea, a pattern by Amanda Bell. This is also for a short, well, cap sleeve style top. And the bottom of the top is very basic. It has a ribbed waistband, and then it's just plain stockinette in the round all the way up over the bust. And then on the top, there's a color shift and a beautiful, beautiful lace. And in some of the featured patterns on Ravelry, there's this really delicate row of tiny buttons for closure over one of the shoulders. I love that look. And I think this will be a beautiful top for spring, but also something, because of the colors and the yarn that I'm choosing, also something that would be nice for a special occasion indoors in much colder weather. Because I plan to use some very special yarn in my stash for this knit. I have two gifts from Claire of New Hampshire Knits. One is a Devon Gray Wensleydale, 100% Wensleydale yarn. 100 grams is, I think, just over 430 yards. So that yardage is fingering weight, but because Wensleydale is such a long staple wool, it's really much, much finer than that. It's more of a lace weight look to the yarn, but it will have a bit of a halo and this gorgeous, gorgeous natural gray color. That's the color I plan to use for the lace work at the top of the sweater. And then for the very plain stockinette base of the sweater, or torso, I plan to use some John Arbin Alpaca 2-3 ply in the color Merlot, which is this gorgeous deep red. Claire gave me a skein of this yarn when we went to Rhinebeck and exchanged a few gifts the first evening we were there. And I think I would like to hold this yarn double. So I did acquire another skein of the yarn so I can hold it double for the base of the sweater. The yardage is 100 grams is 654 yards. So this is much more of a lace weight yarn. It's 90% alpaca, 10% nylon. The color is gorgeous, and I think that the weight will be perfect holding it double for this sweater. And I love the way the two colors play together. I think it's beautiful. Jasmine tee has a number of concerns for me as a knitter. The pattern advises knitting it with quite a bit of ease, which I don't think is necessary at all. And some of the tops that are featured on Ravelry seem a bit ill-fitting. So I plan to start with numbers for the Bonnie sweater. And then based on how that's going and how that fit works for the body of the sweater, just picking up whatever size seems most appropriate to knit the lace at the top. It's maybe a stretch, but I feel pretty confident about my ability to guess regarding my gauge and to make decisions using different sizes and different stitch counts in a pattern. I fooled around with it a little bit. Maybe it's made me unnecessarily bold, but I hope in this case it's a technique that will work well. The third top I have in mind is more of a possibility than a definite at this point. I love the look of this sweater, but if the Pearl Soho top is something I absolutely love, I may knit a second sweater with different yarn and use the same pattern. Otherwise, Ready for Spring by Yellow Cosmo is a really darling sweater with a bit of a loose cowl neckline, some smocking in the front on the chest, cap sleeves, and then the body of the sweater is split. So it covers just below the bust line and then splits, so it's perfect for wearing over a thin tank top or a camisole. And I think it would be perfect in some Ella Ray lace merino that I bought on very deep discount at my local yarn shop. I have two skeins, just over 900 yards of a beautiful colorway. It's called Aqua Yellow Charcoal. And to me, it's like a tropical beach. There's some beautiful turquoise, some really dirty looking kind of charcoal that speckles a little bit into some yellow, not a bright yellow, kind of a muted yellow. And I think that would be really fun for either this Ready for Spring top or maybe another silk and straw sweater. What will you be making for the summer tops make along? There's already a thread open on Ravelry. It has some great suggestions, including a link to the Sorbetto top. This is a sewn top pattern that is available as a digital download for free. There's a lot of variations of this top. There's a sleeveless version, a tunic version, and a version with short sleeves. It looks really darling and quite versatile. So that's a good thing to check out if you're interested in sewing a summer top. And folks are posting all kinds of links and ideas and photographs of yarns and fabrics. So I really look forward to seeing your suggestions and your progress there. I will have some prizes for this make-along. At this point, I have no idea what they will be. But prizes for make-alongs are typically just awarded to participants in the thread. So become a member, join the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, and head on over to participate in the thread. Ever-expanding skill set. This week I tried a new recipe for a sauce. Not only have I never made a sauce like this, I've never tasted a lemon ginger sauce or thought about how those two flavors would interplay. So I looked online. I was looking for something interesting to go over shrimp, and I found a recipe for a lemon ginger sauce. Of course, I will provide a link. And this recipe is actually a combination of two different recipes. So the shrimp are steamed and then used to make a stock, and the stock becomes part of the eventual sauce. I did a truncated version of this because I didn't have time to allow the shrimp to cool in the brining liquid for 4 hours to overnight. So I hastened up the recipe a little bit. But I just wanted to talk about the method of thickening for this sauce and different methods of thickening a sauce in general. In a previous episode, I talked about beginning a sauce with a roux. That's R-O-U-X. For those of you who may not have heard that term before, it's a combination of equal parts fat and flour. In my case, I tend to use butter and just a regular all-purpose flour. But someone, actually, it was interesting, someone posted on the board an interest in using a vegan and gluten-free version of this to see how coconut oil and maybe garbanzo bean flour would work as a roux. I think that's really interesting, something to try. With a roux, depending on how long you cook it, you can go from just something that will create a creamy type of sauce to something that will create like a darker and deeper type of sauce. You have to be careful not to allow your starch to burn or the fat to burn. In the case of using butter, it is very important not to get that heat too high, or the butter will start to burn and you can end up with a bitter undertaste to your sauce. But the whole point of a roux is that you begin by creating your thickening agent and then you add liquids. And as you add them, that starch and fat combination thicken your sauce. The lemon ginger sauce that I made used a completely different method of thickening. I tend to prefer the roux because I feel like it lends a more velvety mouthfeel. And often a roux is used to thicken a sauce that has some sort of cream or milk base to it. Not always, but often. And a roux can be used to thicken a sauce that will eventually have cheese added to it. In the case of the lemon ginger sauce, you start with the liquids and then you add a slurry. A slurry is a combination of liquid, often water, but it could be stock. And this liquid is cool or room temperature. And to the liquid, you whisk in some cornstarch or arrowroot. And then you just drizzle that liquid, that cloudy kind of liquid, into your sauce pot. And this agent of the cornstarch or the arrowroot works to thicken the sauce. So it's two different methods of achieving basically the same thing, this thickening agent, but one, the roux, starts at the beginning of the cooking process, and a slurry is nearer to the end of the cooking process. I mentioned that a roux tends to give a sauce sort of a velvety, rich sort of mouthfeel. On the other hand, a slurry will provide the sauce with a glassier, shinier look to it, a kind of a sheen. It looks more translucent and bright in color. And so it can be good for sauces that will eventually be cooled or served at room temperature. Whereas I can't imagine serving a sauce made from a roux anything but piping hot. I think a cold sauce made from a roux would be too clumpy and gelatinous looking. I wonder if anyone has any alternatives or anything to add to that statement, but I'm just trying to think of all my experience with sauces, and that seems to be true. I can't think of any outliers. So this sauce made with a slurry has a really glassy, clear, beautiful look to it. It makes it really lovely for serving over seafood, something where you don't want to coat or cover or mask the food, But in the case of the dinner I made, I had this really beautiful steamed shrimp and I wanted it to really not be coated or covered, but just to be elevated by the look of the sauce. Another reason I prefer sauces thickened with a roux to those thickened with a slurry is that sometimes I feel like I can taste the cornstarch or arrowroot. And it just has a discernible taste, and I just want to taste the other ingredients in the sauce. In the case of this ginger and lemon sauce, the ginger and lemon flavors were so unbelievably powerful that I did not detect the taste of the arrowroot. So that was a plus. And then I also thought this sauce was good cold, good reheated. I had some leftover pasta and broccoli. We ate all the shrimp, of course, and I don't think shrimp reheat that well, so it's not something I like to use as leftovers. But I did have some pasta and I had some broccoli, and I put the leftover sauce on top of that and just put it in a storage container in the refrigerator, and it was excellent reheated. So I think this sauce is a new addition to my repertoire. Great for over seafoods. I'm not sure about chicken. I think I would limit this to fish and shellfish, but maybe a variation that doesn't require shrimp stock could be used over just pasta and vegetables or rice and vegetables. We have one more week in March, and that means one more week of experimentation with sauces. So cook along, look up a recipe, try something new, think about a sauce you've had at a favorite restaurant and see if you can create it in your own kitchen. And I look forward to hearing about it. And so forth. I'd like to conclude today by talking a little bit about some upcoming sewing plans. I have in mind a skirt to coordinate with the three knit tops that I mentioned earlier in the episode. And yesterday I actually took out all of the yarn that I plan to use for these knit tops, and I took out the laundered fabric that I plan to use for the skirt. Because though I've been turning over in my mind the coordination of these garments for weeks now, I have never bothered to actually look at whether the colors work together or not. And to my extreme delight and surprise, all three color choices for the sweaters work with this beautiful 100% linen fabric that I bought to make a skirt. I would describe the fabric color as like a stone gray. And it has the quality of being able to look kind of gray, kind of green, kind of brown. There's something really muted and soft and wonderful about it. It doesn't stand out at all as a color. It's sort of an organic sort of a color. And I think it's the perfect choice to go with these tops. The skirt I plan to sew is the Salt Marsh skirt. It's from the Merchant and Mills workbook. And the subtitle for this book is A Collection of Versatile Sewing Patterns for an Elegant All-Season Wardrobe. I think it was last year, I purchased the Lotta Janstotter Everyday Style book and made several patterns from the same book. She also had a lot of accessory ideas, so I made bracelets, I forget what all, a couple other things that I made to kind of coordinate. And a pattern book is a really good value because sewing patterns range, especially independent sewing patterns, range from like $14 to $20, sometimes even more, for a paper pattern. And this is a whole book of patterns that I got for about $25. In addition to the patterns themselves, there's an absolutely gorgeous instruction manual, style photos. The book really puts forth a whole fashion aesthetic, and it's I think it's a great way to start envisioning wardrobe and how pieces will work together. I do not love every single thing in this workbook. There are two jackets that I feel are a bit oversized and masculine, frankly, for a feminine wardrobe. Maybe it's just the way they're modeled, I'm not sure. But I'm excited about enough things in the book to warrant making the purchase and trying out several of the patterns. So this salt marsh skirt will be first. It's a very plain drawstring skirt that's long, and it has very deep pockets. I think it will be perfect in this linen. And one of the things about this Merchant and Mills workbook is it's, of course, designed to coordinate with their fabrics, which are, for the most part, natural colors and certainly natural fibers. So it's great if you have linen or cotton in mind, or if you're looking for something very plain that maybe you dye yourself, it could be a good choice. So the salt marsh skirt will be my first garment from that. And others that interest me are the curlew. It's a dress that's cut on the bias, and I'm really excited about that. I also purchased linen fabric to make that dress. I think bias cut dresses can just give a lot of shape, even to a simple silhouette. So they also make for quite a bit of waste of your fabric. So maybe I can get a few accessories or another top or something out of that fabric, because cutting pattern pieces on the bias does mean that you need more fabric. I'm also interested in the heron, which is a wrap top, and I do have several cuts of fabric that could be appropriate for that top. And perhaps when I'm feeling a little bit more confident, the pair of wide leg trousers called stride that are in this book. That would be a pretty sophisticated sew for me, with pockets, a waistband, a zipper fly. It's a lot of things that could go wrong, but also a lot of possibilities for more superior fit. And so far, my sewn garments have been rather unstructured. So I think trying a pair of trousers, I'm just thinking like a pair of linen trousers would be an excellent wardrobe staple. And I do like the silhouette of these. I think a menswear fit on a woman can look very flattering, but I think if you accompany that with a giant oversized jacket, it starts to look a bit clownish. My first step in sewing this salt marsh skirt will be to take all the pattern pieces out of the booklet and use some of my own paper to create my own version of the pattern. So I have a practice of never cutting into the pattern pieces or the printouts that are provided with the pattern, but always to trace my own copy. And I've been using a very thin, non-fusible interfacing to do this. And I purchase it by the yard, and I purchase the least expensive thing I can find. But still, it adds up. This has become pretty expensive. And so I've looked into some other types of paper that I could use. And I just received a big roll of exam table paper. It's the kind of thing you see in the doctor's office where they just pull the sheet over the exam table and you sit down, crunch, 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 and then they rip it off and throw it away when you're gone. I read the reviews. A lot of people talked about using it for cutting patterns. They said it's thin enough to work with easily, but thick enough so that it doesn't rip like tissue paper the first time you, poke your finger at it or you're working with a scissors or a pencil. And it does seem to have a certain resilience to it, because one side is coated with something or it's heat set so that it's a little less fragile. I have a giant roll, so I hope that this is a useful technique and an effective tool. I think it will tape together very easily. It's certainly thin enough that I can see the lines and the pattern markings on the original pattern so I can trace it through. And then the next test I'll do is to see if using a Sharpie bleeds through this paper, because I do like to use a Sharpie to create the patterns. It's easy to see and cut out. Sometimes, though, it bleeds through onto the original pattern, and in that case, I need to use a pencil first and then trace over the lines with a Sharpie. So I'm interested in seeing how that will work. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I wish you a wonderful week of making time with friends and family and special, special things in your life this time of year. I'll be back again next week with another episode. Bye.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. Bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature, sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. Chipmunk on the lawn, six turkeys up in munching like fat hogs. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. The theme song for this episode is So Wheat Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, recorded by Bovine Social Club. If you enjoy this episode, I hope you'll consider joining the Ravelry group or the Facebook page, following me on social media, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Each week, I post show notes, links, and photographs of the things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a mighty fine nature thing.